some of you know this already, but I think it's worth repeating. Recently, last year, the Gardaí got their suspended allowances reinstated, and I knew nothing about allowances, so I researched it, and I came to the conclusion that Gardaí are lucky because they get allowances. A guard gets an allowance for putting on and taking off his uniform. He gets another allowance for washing and cleaning his uniform. He gets a needle and thread allowance for mending his uniform, and he gets a coat hanger allowance for hanging up his uniform in a wardrobe for which he gets another separate allowance. But all of those allowances fade into insignificance by comparison to the best allowance that a guard gets paid. Now listen up. When a guard is on his holidays, he's not allowed to wear his uniform because he's on his holidays. But if he wasn't on his holidays, he could be wearing the uniform. And if he was wearing the uniform, he would be entitled to work overtime. Unfortunately, he's not allowed to work overtime because he is, in fact, in the Bahamas, out of uniform, on his holidays. But even though he's in the Bahamas, on his holidays, therefore not allowed to wear the uniform, therefore not entitled to work overtime, he's still entitled to be paid overtime. He gets compensated for being on his holidays. He gets a special on your holidays in the Bahamas overtime compensation allowance, which means he gets paid for the overtime that he might have been working if he was back in Tipperary. I'm sorry, he's not in Tipperary. His uniform is still hanging up on the coat hanger in the wardrobe where he left it before he got on the plane, and now he is in fact in the Bahamas out of uniform earning overtime on his holidays. Ladies and gentlemen, the man that came up with that allowance on behalf of the Garda Representative Association is not short of a genius. Not only is he a peerless lateral thinker, he's also able to think horizontally, vertically, and diagonally all at the same time. Gardaí up and down the country regard that man as a hero. And rightly so. That man's a ledge bag. Gardaí up and down the country whisper that man's name with reverence and awe. Gardaí up and down the country name their children after that man. Out of respect and gratitude. Particularly Gardaí who conceive children whilst in the Bahamas out of uniform earning overtime on their holidays. Because it's not an easy thing to conceive a child when you're wearing a uniform. I know, I tried it twice. The first time, mind you, wasn't a real uniform. Actually, it was dungarees, but the same principle applies, I believe you me, it's tricky. The second time was a bangar. She was with the traffic division. She was only horsing to conceive a child. Her biological clock was ticking. I was sitting in the squad car. She was kneeling up on the back seat. Her only magnificent navy blue clad, awesome half acre of an arse cocked up in the air. I swear she was on fire. She was on duty. She was wearing the uniform and she was working overtime. And Gardaí are grateful they don't have to wear their uniform when they're in the Bahamas on their holidays because there's a serious risk that they might overheat and become sick as a dog, which would spoil their holidays, even though they would then be eligible for a special sick as a dog on your holidays in brackets with a letter from the doctor in the Bahamas, close the brackets, compensation allowance. But that's too complicated for me. All you need to know is this, that the man that came up with that allowance on behalf of the Garda Representative Association is nothing short of a genius. Thank you.
I brought two notebooks with me. There's my older unhappy notebook and a newer, slightly more optimistic notebook. So I'm still deciding what I'm going to read, but I'll start with the your notebook with something that I just wrote today at work. My love was a dream between two sleeps. We'd only met a couple of weeks before, when I went traveling for a week. And on return, I fell asleep on the plane and woke up wildly longing to be with you again. I kept loving you for the year we were together and long after you left. 6 months later, I was traveling alone again and on a plane above the Italian Alps, where I again fell asleep. I woke up with a tremendous joy of being free and felt whole for the first time since that longing awoke, since the thought entered my head that you might be the other half of my immortal soul. I did love you for real, but in retrospect, it feels like my love was a dream suspended between two sleeps up in the air. I still think back to it with warm reminiscence, at times of need recalling that sweet sleepfulness of dozing off under a hot sun without a care in the world. Thank you. I'm going to read some older ones as well because they're more depressing, but the stuff I've written recently is such pathetic, heartbreak poetry that I even make myself sick. So I'll go back to some of the older stuff.
Just
one. Oh, okay. Okay, something that's not a heartbreak poem. The Buttocks of a Goddess. On a guided tour of the National Gallery, a young man whispers to another in a disrespectfully loud whisper, "Look at that arse." It's not just any arse he's commenting on, but the arse of Diana, the goddess of the hunt and the moon in Titian's famous painting. Apparently an error in perspective, Diana's buttocks are shown from multiple angles, an unintentional cubist effect, which in an otherwise realistic painting looks like an utterly enormous behind composed of an excessive number of buttocks. The gallery visitor's rude comment illustrates the world of fine art to the rest of the guided tour from a novel perspective. These pretentious intellectuals can only see ominous symbolism foreshadowing the death of Actaeon and a somber forest depicted by the hand of an inhumanely talented manierist. For the first time, they pay attention to the relatable factors. Even a goddess can have a massive arse, and an artistic genius can make mistakes in anatomically correct presentation. We just have to keep it to one poem so that everybody gets their time on the open mic. Good meeting, Ahmed. Thank you. Next up is Jason.
So this is called The Hangman. Or The Hangmen. The hangmen gather and smoke cigars, circle around a bed of sallow skin flowers and pleading kinds, laid out by the maiden who wished to persuade them, pleading, "Dear hangman, see mercy and yield." For her lover lay weary last noon what couldn't come soon, ready and steady and drinking their way through. The hangmen, how they stand so still. With all life drawn, they untie everything. Prepare, for your man will come slipping and climbing for you. Go, now, for your time is to tick and to talk for noon. Go, go, we have work to be done, work that no other will do. Well, the time and its hand has come to an end, and the crowd cheers the hangman's arrival, and the lover sees his woman for the last time, and the maiden slips back from the crowd. Good night to you all, and have a good rest, says a whisper from all corners of the town. Dear hangman, sleep with thy knife. Keep warm, for the cold is catching. In a damp, moulded room with hangman in bed, a fierce figure leans over gently. In darkness, she whispers, good night, and down on his head comes a mallet. On the morn of another sun, grey clouds fill the hangman's circle. with the smell of raw whiskey, lips chipped and crispy, the day's work is about to begin. The crowd glorify his statue as the lever rests in hand. By his feet lays a pink dried out rose. He cautioned for a second and meekly continued. Dear hangman, sleep with thy knife. The cricket could be heard chirping outside the hangman's room as the fierce figure stood still. Gracefully, shadow followed moon. No measuring tape required, no knot to be knotted. Just down on his head came a mallet. And now the fame was faceless. The crowd applauded quieter, hearing whispers in the night of the night maid and her call.
Hello, and just before I say my poem, I wanted to say thank you to Jessica Trainer. I'm unexpectedly alongside Cork tonight, and I didn't actually know that Jessica was going to be here. Jessica kindly selected a poem of mine called Empty to appear in the Hungary curation at Epic Museum in Dublin. I'm working on my first collection of some experiences that I've been working since 2015 in the Mediterranean in the migrant crisis, and I've been involved in the rescue of over 4,000 people with the Irish Naval Service. So thank you very much, Jessica. Jessica this week I actually became a paid poet, which was it's an amazing thing. But Joe Carroll had this in his hand, and I'm not going to talk about migrants, I'm going to talk about Mother Jones, probably one of the greatest Irish women and that there ever was and ever will be.
Among many
fantastic Irish women, and she's a hero of mine. So this is published about a year ago. It's called Mother Jones. She was 93 years old, grandmother of all agitators. Emigrant teacher's words stirred men to action. She wrote her story down. Passing labour's flame from Pennsylvania, from coal mining heartlands built on the bones of union. Tales of the Silk Children's Night Crusader, charging the power of the mill. The call of the woman at the north side fell into the ear of the ragged trousered wretch, growing straight in the regimented pines, arrayed through the ruins of famine homesteads, hemmed in by the meandering grindstone walls built from their shells. Pray for the dead, fight like hell for the living. In mines or bogs or dockyard slips, the boots, seats and neck, the company scales, the pockets pick. Join a union. Gale of social justice, blowing across the stamped out fires, rising from the body blow of a lost yellow fever family. None came to her in the nights of grief. She went out instead to others, rebuilding after tragedy, entirely reduced in the remains of the dressmakers, black ashen rooms of Chicago, where sky pilots pray for reward in the next life, reached by suffering in this one. Mary, calling for a bit of heaven to come to earth, claiming her home wherever the fight may be. She lies at peace in Illinois, surrounded by her battling boys, the fallen of Verdun, where white and black truthfully stood to face detectives' rifles. The Union made remembered each 11th of October, where strong men and toil-torn women gather to kneel on Mount Olive, laying black flowers on pink granite, heads uncovered to remember the miners' angel mother.
Next up is Jim Pritter.
Oh,
hey.
now you're going to see my really geeky side. Do you know the movie Aliens?
Yes.
Yeah, like, extremely obsessed with it. And I don't know, someone said it was like sympathy for the devil, because I don't know, I kind of just love the aliens, I'm just going to be with them. Okay. Alien queen resting inside the hive, slick with fluid, that black and phallic head. Violence comes naturally as motherhood. Alien queen spreading out your webs, that thin and tangled poison. Won't you wrap me hand and foot and leave me to your larvae? How I crave the edge of your danger, helpless in your webs, waiting for Ellen Ripley to scale her way through this corrugated city, to unwrap me and set your nest ablaze. How sorely I want that showdown, for Ripley to scream, "Get away from her, you bitch!" before fighting to the death. But when you fall through that airlock, please know I swear to follow you. Please dig your claws inside my clavicle. We freeze in the black starry ether and float, our eyes locked together, slow dancing the universe.
I read this years ago, I don't know what to say about it, I don't know what came to mind. Cousin Eusty, he had orange and lemon trees in his garden, some 20 miles from Adelaide, our cousin Eusty, William Eustace O'Leary of Bantry. In old age and deafness he held forth, he liked scandal in neighbouring states, West Australia. Perth was a long way away, and El Dorado. As a young law student, he approached my parents outside the Bantry Chapel asking, "Can I come too?" He had heard that they were sailing to New York. They went as a foursome, Gerald, Alice, Billy, and Eusty. They saw the World's Fair at Flushing Meadows, skyscrapers, the Empire State, Grant's tomb. In a nightclub, Eusty said, "Will this help?" Producing a roll of notes like a bookies man at a racehorse. They went for a day to Washington. Arriving, they took a taxi and said, "Drive." Then their ways parted. Eusty went to the war, then to Australia, the others to their deaths and businesses, my mother to her children. He left behind his yacht.
Thank you, Charles Carmina Margaret. Patricia Walsh.
Home about surviving a nervous breakdown and the depression that ensued. This is called Watching the Meltdown. In a sound eye, your heart is full of light. I remove from the association from your beloved. Staple of that coffee sings in a miniature box. Anxiety from separation is still acute as required. The regular lighting not matters in this crash. Sitting alone in classrooms above it all, Appropriate poison where one was engendered, never left alone, suffering part of us. Hospital in Outer Sanctum, like the radio, to Mr. JJ's voice, the only rule here. Excavate the flowers to someone else's liking. The stinging cold is all I have to savour. Crying in the dark, asking for it all. Local history bedevils the situation well. Throwing obligations into the fire at will. Slightest trace of vanity cornered to rest. I can never exit this. Crying through brass tacks. Quizzical redemption, 18 nails of glory. Redly spot something points for a show of affection. Remaining quiet in the future, a paramount act. Not enough for vodka, enough catcalls. Quite squared his hits, a bridge not far enough. Returning to the fold is probably a worse option. Magnificently turning over despair indeed. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I must apologise. I'm feeling slightly vertigo tonight. So this poem here has a history. I have two of my poems are actually they both happen to be anthologised. One is the poem Croc Bogs. That is in the Cork on the Banks anthology.
Yeah.
No, actually in the new one,
Journey.
The Journey Home, yeah. And
a place called home.
It's about, it links a couple of poems about a place, Cork being the bogs, the bogland. And my partner grew up in the bogs. In Ballyfihan, basically, when the bogland was not covered by a motor way yet, and when there was actually like bogland, nature, birds, everything, and the dump wasn't the dump yet. What has now become the next thing, which is the Tramore Valley Park.
It's too many of us. Too many.
And that's what this is about, the Tramore Valley Park, right? It's the newest stage of this area. That was down there. Euphemism. The screeching dump gulls silent now, just as the curlew of the bogland and the superflux of birds. You set your foot down by the circus tent, shivering as you had known each patch of grass beneath. Covered now with 30 yards of waste, dumped on the natural drainage of the land, the city of Cork plagued now with floods, and the bogs are suffocated under the years of civic rubbish and the tarmac of the Link Road. They masked the stinking plastic with lawn, drove away the pestering dump gulls, and laid out paths for family days out. They call it Tramore Valley Park now. When the Lord Mayor cut the ribbon and the politicians celebrated their deed, you cursed them for the loss of the curlew and the millions of birds of the marsh, for the patches of grass you once knew, the natural habitat that once was, lost now to this trauma of a plastic park, this euphemism for the death of true nature. The bogland buried deep under the dark of yards of garbage, no grave and no mark that quelled the songs of the curlew and lark. They call it Tramore Valley Park.
This is a new one. This can go either way. So a lot of people in our office have lovely pictures of their families and all their children, and shit, it's only me. So I have pictures of beautiful people I've come across in my lifetime, stuck around the community. Not many of them, but well, I have come across many beautiful people. Not many of them around my office. And There's this one then stuck in the bottom left corner of my monitor that I keep looking at, and maybe because I keep looking at it, it has changed a small bit. Yeah. So this was just sort of popped out during work. Maybe I shouldn't do this, but anyway. Yep, I write poems during work.
Oh no.
This is a secret of poets. We write poems during our work lives when we really are supposed to be doing something else. The secret's out.
I cannot recognize you. Once so vivid, the elegant lilt of your letters, written on the daffodil card. That was your name. It would have spoken out to me once. Far away, we have grown out of our memories. The hands writing on the cards has changed, reshaped. That G looks like an F, and the B has fallen out. The N has missing its tail, and that U has a dot, as does I. I know your name, only I can read it, or you. Thank you.
This is called Burnt Out Match. Finding the singing pub a woeful drag, they move outside to smoke a final fag. Two weary strangers, both the worse for wear, just the old story of a mismatched pair. She to seek affection and protection, be prepared for sex and not rejection. Neither are moonstruck, but hide their many scars. She could be straight from Venus, he from Mars. The urges of biology dictate that they hook up, if not exactly mate. Not the two halves of Plato's perfect egg, more like a square hole and a round peg. If in the morning they awake to find a close encounter of a different kind, he may light up with a laconic air. She may persuade herself she doesn't care. And yet, to couple seems a primal urge. Love Island shows how much it is a scourge.
This is just being at a moment on Saturday when I was looking at a bride in Brixton talking to my son about jazz chords, and my friend was on the phone feeling like crap. She writes songs and I write songs with her sometimes. So combined the three things into a little piece just there. So, found it.
Show me to hold it.
Yeah. Do it. I'm a Brixton bride with a bowler hat and a butterfly tattoo. I've got a buckwheat burrito and a Brazilian capri, and I down a few pints of cider before the do. Getting hitched with me mate, a tax write-off, twist of fate. We get a flat at South Hull, I'll clap me. I wear my tartan frocks and get away. I think I'm doing double accent. Get away with the goal, with the takeaway, the scuff lot. And with a bit of luck, the old geezer, I learned to love him. so she'd get married with her mate to some fella she just met, she said, for tax. So Dominic was teaching me the cards and the rum was on the phone, so this is kind of a cheesy sound that came out. Can you do it now?
All night.
Huh?
Cheese and tomato.
That's a kind of thing. This fella's Sarah Dominic's on.
And anxiety, hurling fistfuls of shite to entomb the larynx. Snickering eyes peer to the hushed darkness, polio babies' knotted fingers gnarling new dents in the pitted floor. The glutton's buffet of assembled toxins, the derailed ecstasy of the mind run off the tracks, the squeeze of the inner vice, head butting backwards down the tunnel, skittering and scrabbling with 1,000 beetles' feet along the wall. An opening to softness, mood light, low lamps, rhythmic cries of the rat in the glue trap, gnawing on his own leg off. Snout buried in the familiar gag of the pillow, the fire poker pain points spotlighting the red splotches pooling around the thighs, the throat a chrome beetle caught in last month's exoskeleton, the stiffness asphyxiating and silencing the weeping. A gong goes off as her head hits the wall, a dizzying sound stream melding bedclothes and torn clothes to scorched dunes, blistering stone facades stare impassively at the onslaught, battering rams slam the innermost walls, fist flashing red through the rise and fall. The rat hacks expertly through his final limb, bleeding out at the foot of the bed, rodent and redhead retch and recoil. Shock slips under the sheet, holds each of them in one arm, with a kiss on each forehead brings the welcome weight of numbness, the slowing of each breath, until eventually the escape to sleep.
First, thanks very much to Jessica. I really enjoyed your reading. Thanks very much for that. There's a man, there's a very modest man, and it happens to be his birthday today. So I'm going to read this poem. Not about him, but about another man who is the complete opposite of him. And for the purpose of not offending anyone, I've given him a fake name. So the poem is called Don't Call Pacey. His name is Pacey. When you're new in town and looking for poetry, simply do not call Pacey, no matter what. You can try to Google the local wordsmith scene, but you will be sifting through websites infested with Pacey's face and name, a man that neither writes nor reads nor cares about poetry's got event pages and info banner, but this banner is a relevant biography. So you read the small print, find a date and a place. You rock down with your poet socks up, delighted to see this nice warm pub. And you're 10 minutes late, but there's Pacey still talking. Till he forgets the guest's name and tags out of the mic just to run upstairs and hide. Michelle, he says, after my reading, will you come down to Slam next week? I'm finding it hard to bring the young crowd in. I thought, no wonder, you gluttonous thunder, considering. I said I'd be there, and I practiced for a week, till he cancels the event, tells me, due to lack of interest towards high ticket prices for his benefit. Pacey, I don't know who told you you can profit from poetry, but try to suck the life out of some other industry. Now he works in an unsuccessful wedding band, and if I was being wed to his music, I think it would taint the relationship. So if you're new in town and looking for poetry, whatever you do, don't call Pacey. But if you're new in Cork City and looking for somewhere to speak, I might know just the man to thank, and that's just between you and me. Oh.
I'm sitting at the bar next to you, and my sadness is sucking the smile off your face like a Hoover that sucks up the dirt from a Linky cup. I look at what I've done, and I think to myself that I'd better leave. I'll leave into the night before I do more harm. Maybe I'd get robbed, and that thief could end up in that same bar. Take the chair to your left, and put that stolen smile back to where it belongs. I prefer to think that it is better to know a hero masked thief saved you from looking sad for the rest of your life instead of me absorbing all your joy and laughter and turning it into dust. Dust to the Hoover shall suck up.
Thank you to everyone for reading tonight and listening tonight. A big round of applause again for Jessica Trainor.